So, JT, this is the second show that you're on this week, and you've been on two others just since Canadian Nationals as well. So I guess the question is, are you trying to take over?
My ideal nickname is Tiku, the emperor of the entire known universe. And so, yeah, why not?
Tiku, wait. T-I-C-H-U?
No. Okay. T-E-E-K-U, the emperor of the entire known universe.
Okay, so you are the emperor of the entire known universe.
Yeah,
that's the message. Excellent. Well, I don't know anything about Tiku, but I've played Tichu and found it to be interesting.
Never played that one.
Fair enough. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back. This is the 53rd edition of the Reserve Pool, and today we are talking all about Origins. This is Dave, and joining me on the line is not Evan. After a year, we decided let's give Evan a week off. No, we have the other TRPer who is going to make the trek to Origins, JT. How's everything going for you right now, JT?
Today has been awesome. Actually, I think my wife and I sold a house in Cincinnati today, so today is excellent.
Oh, why the house in Cincinnati?
A couple years ago, we moved from Cincinnati to Indianapolis, and the market was pretty tough, and we had a hard time selling a house. And so we rented it out for a couple years, and recently that lease terminated, and so we were able to try and get the house ready and get it on the market, and today we got under contract, so...
Good on you. Well, I'm glad that worked out for you. That's a pain. And as my wife and I are looking at buying, that's something that's in our mind. There are some good houses in our area for not a whole lot, but it's like there's also a lot of things that aren't selling that are taking forever to sell. And I worry about buying something that we can't get rid of when we decide to move to a different spot. And so, yeah, but this show is not about mortgages, 30-year fixed or otherwise. This show is about Dice Masters and, more importantly, the people who love to play it. So let's start with the first word. And today, so this happens to all of us, and this week there can only be one winner. So let's have some preemptive therapy for everybody out there who's maybe heading to Origins or who just has a local store organized play event this weekend. Nothing wrong with those. In fact, I would argue they're more important than whatever we have going on in Columbus this week. The local scene, the grassroots, that's where it's all about. Anyway, worst loss playing Dice Masters. Happens to all of us. How about you, JT, reigning Canadian national champion?
maybe that part is true, but I tell you what, it took me like, I don't know, 6 weeks to beat Randy at all. So anytime I sit down with him, I'm just prepared for my worst loss ever. When I lost in the Swiss rounds at Canadian Nationals against Fun for Willis, against Wiley, I lost 20-0 and felt like, why am I even here? And most recently, I was playing against my six-year-old. And I took so we play without card text. Because she just likes to play. And I told her, she was asking about some of the characters. And I told her, there's some stories where Marvel Girl is actually the daughter of Cyclops and Phoenix. And so she like puts Cyclops and Phoenix and Marvel Girl all on her team. And I took a calculated risk and swung to get her down to like one life, just like, you're at one. What are we going to do now? And she had like 15 dice in her bag, and she pulled two sidekicks and Cyclops and Phoenix and rolled level 3 Cyclops and level 1 Phoenix and 2 energy and hit me back and took me down to 0. So that hurt pretty bad because I was trying to like teach her to save blockers and stuff, and then I didn't, and she won. So,
well, maybe she learned that lesson well. Honey, don't do what I do.
Yeah. So,
wow. For me, I have to go with my first ever DC draft, and this was at Nationals. And I've talked a little bit about this before, but I think it's relevant now. Like, let this be a lesson to any of you who are going to cons this year. Do not start a game. And I hear a lot of people say this advice, and I should have taken heed at Nationals. Do not start a game, even one that you like, when you're tired and or it's getting late. The getting late is going to be more relevant to Origins than this one. I was just tired after two qualifiers. And I drafted a villain team and didn't have any reliable way of knocking them out, like, at all. And then I didn't think to take Takedown, which has the make this thing a villain global and other things like that. It was just it was poor thought all around. And I'm playing against Kelly, great dude. And, like, I think it was, like, 20 to 15. And we had been playing for, like, a half hour. And I said, I got to be honest, I am tired and bored. You mind if I scoop? And I walked away. That was terrible. I mean, it wasn't a bad loss in the game, but it was bad, and I shouldn't have stepped into that one. They needed another for draft, and I was happy to see the cards and experience the draft, but I shouldn't have stepped into that one. If you are tired, do not start a game that you like. You will regret it. Especially don't start a new game. My gosh, I just imagine somewhere in my head somebody who's gonna, like, a first time player of Twilight Imperium 3 at like, sitting down at 11 p.m. This game looks cool. Yeah, don't do that either. But so, it wasn't a bad loss from a Dice Masters game standpoint, but it was a bad loss from a what am I even doing here right now standpoint. So that's my story.
So Zombie Dave conceded. The end of the day.
Zombie Dave conceded. Yeah, I don't think I'd eaten anything. I had an Auntie Annie's pretzel. Because the second qualifier started so fast after the first one ended, and it was a rough go.
Wow.
So I should have just been like, no, guys, sorry, I got to run. Instead, I'm like, no, draft, Dave, you love draft, play some draft. Oops.
Man.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that wasn't the best. All right, well, JT, you and I aren't the only ones who have some things to talk about this week. Let's check in with everybody else who gave us stuff that they want to talk about this week, too.
The Reserve Pool presents. There and back again, where we take a look at a character from a set long ago and see how they fit into strategy in today's game. I'm your host, Randy, and with me, as always, here is
Abigail.
Yep. And today, we are going to look at a character that Abigail really likes. Who is this?
X-23.
Do you remember her real name?
Laura.
Yep, Laura. X-23 is actually a clone of fan favorite Wolverine. X-23 has an interesting character history. She first appeared in the X-Men Evolution animated series and then made the jump to printed comic books sometime later. She made her first comic book appearance in NYX number 3 back in 2004. So she's relatively new to the Marvel Comics universe. Some of you who play video games may recognize her from Marvel vs. Capcom 3. She was a playable character in that. What do you like about
X-23? She's Wolverine's daughter.
She's Wolverine's daughter?
Yeah. Yeah,
effectively. Is there anything else you like about her?
Yeah.
What?
Because she has claws like Wolverine.
She has claws like Wolverine, but she's a girl. Yeah. But let's talk about Dice Masters. I do think it's interesting that none of her versions are a member of the X-Men team affiliation, but we've had, I mean, heck, if Nightcrawler's not a part of the X-Men team affiliation, then I guess no one else is a guarantee. So first, let's just start at the basement.
I want you to wear the headphones.
You don't want to wear the headphones? Why?
I need to talk in the microphone.
Oh, you need to talk in the microphone?
Yeah.
You can do both. Okay, now what?
I won't keep doing it.
Oh, you want me to keep talking?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's... What are you doing?
Nothing.
You can't sit that close to the microphone. You gotta scoot back a little. Okay?
Okay.
Alright, we're gonna fly through these. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is the common. How much does it cost?
Four.
It has the ability X-23 cannot block. I think this is a real solid card. It has, you know, great attack stats, 5, 6, and 7 across their three levels. But it's kind of at that reduced purchase cost because she has that negative ability on there. This was the first card that I remember us seeing released in Dice Masters that had a negative ability. And yeah, I really like this one. Let's go to the uncommon. How much does the uncommon cost?
6.
6 cost. When X-23 attacks, choose a Fist or Bolt character. That character must block her. This one's also good. With that high attack power, she'll probably knock out that Bolt or Fist. And let's be pretty honest, Bolt and Fist characters are prevalent in the constructed meta. Everyone loves Mask Energy for PXG, but I think most characters that people gravitate towards, like the Ant-Man, Serena, Hulk, those are Fists. Especially with DC now, with, you know, Firestorm and Hawkman and our old friend Johnny Storm, and Bolts are still very much viable as well. So as far as abilities go, I think it's good. I don't know if it's worth the extra 2 purchase costs, though. And moving on to the rare, which is, how much does the rare cost? Excuse me, assistant, how much does the rare cost?
5.
X-23 must attack if your opponent has a character of cost 5 or higher fielded. X-23 gets +1 defense while attacking. I don't like this one. I mean, I get the idea. If there is a big enough opponent on the other side, X-23 just gets too antsy and just wants to attack and, you know, dives into battle. But I don't see how that's very pertinent. If she's in the field with that high attack power, you're probably going to want her to attack. There's not many times you're going to want her to sit back and just hang out in the field. So in that case, I mean, she has a leg up on the common because she is able to block and she gets an extra defense while attacking. But you're bringing her to attack. So the fact that she can block, that's okay. But with that attack power, you're bringing her to attack. If I was going to pick one of these to use moving forward, I would definitely choose the common. 4 cost, can't block. That's fine. Let's use Anger Issues and give her Overcrush. She's got 5, 6, or 7 attack, and so the +3 attack that Anger Issues would give you, we're talking 8, 9, or 10 attack power with Overcrush.
The computer went off.
The computer did not turn off. The screen just faded to black. See? It's back to normal. Yeah, the only thing I don't like about this character is the fielding costs. Total field cost of 5, a 1, 2, 2. And for a character that you're going to be wanting to cycle through, you know, to attack, to get knocked out, go to your prep area, that's a little high for me. She's not useless, but I think the main knock on this character is the fielding cost. That's just pretty hefty price going against her. That's all for this time. This has been Randy and
Abigail
talking about
X-23.
And I hope you guys enjoyed. Back to you guys.
You might have heard, you might have heard, that there is some kind of convention or something going on this week in Columbus, Ohio. And you might have heard that there's some kind of, I don't know, Dice Masters sort of tournament thing going on there. And so I think this is a good time to talk about that. Perhaps you are driving there and you're listening. Perhaps you are already there and you're trying to deflate after a night at the first qualifier or whatever else. We got you covered. So we're here to talk a little bit about Origins, the con, and Worlds, the event. For one, we're going to Columbus. JT, I have never been to Columbus before. How about you?
Are you serious? Oh,
I have never been.
Columbus is a fabulous city.
That's what I hear.
I went to school, a college in Ohio, and about 80% of the graduates from the college I went to seem to matriculate to Columbus. So I have a lot of friends there. And we find ourselves in Columbus at least a couple times a year, either visiting friends or family or something. Columbus is a great city. I think it's great for living. I think it's great for conventions. Love Columbus.
Yeah. Now, a little bit about Origins. Origins wasn't always in Columbus. I think it wasn't until the late 90s when they decided to make Columbus their home. And that's been great ever since. But Origins bounced around from various cities for several years, from like the 70s forward, I think. I think they had some consistency here and there, but there was also, I think, two different years, the late 80s and the early 90s, when Origins and Gen Con were the same con.
Oh,
which
wow.
is, yeah, which is kind of crazy. And maybe that explains why Origins hasn't grown the way that Gen Con has. I certainly don't know. But this is not a small con by its own right. This is 13,000 unique attendees last year, and that should grow by at least a little bit this year once again. And the other thing is that it's mostly about gaming. Everybody who I know who has been to Origins just talks about, you know, yeah, Gen Con is great because there's all this stuff happening. There's all kinds of hoopla. But Origins, you get to sit down and you get to game and you get to try different things, and it's all about gaming and events surrounding gaming and all sorts of things. So that's where I'm really excited, you know, because I'm not going to just be there for Worlds. I have some extra time in Columbus. I'm going to try and get in some con stuff as well.
Cool. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm literally only going to be able to go for Saturday, and it's probably going to create a little bit of a challenge for me. Saturday is actually my daughter's 7th birthday. So I'm like definitely not winning Father of the Year award this year. I tried to talk her into coming with me, and she's not having it. But whatever. I got a buddy who he goes to Origins every year. He and his gaming group, they live in Columbus, and he swears by it. I mean, he's been asking me to come for years, and it just hasn't worked out. We recently, about a year ago, moved back to Ohio, and so last year's Origins was right at the time we were moving into our house. That didn't work, and so this year I'm going to get to go, even though it's just for the day. So it'll be nice to see Dave and my buddy Dave.
Okay,
not you. It'll be nice to
see
you though.
Wow, I thought we had become
man.
Friends, JT.
Well, it'll be good to see you too. but it'll be good, cool to see Dave, and you know, he's been talking about this conference for literally years, and saying you got to come, and finally going to get a chance to. So
that's awesome
about it.
We've been in a similar boat the last couple of years. So last year we were going to go to Origins. We had everything booked and scheduled, and we just could not get the time to work right for us. And this year events conspired pretty similarly. In fact, my wife is a teacher. I think I've mentioned that before. And all of the snow days that piled up this year took them from being done in late May to being done the week after Origins is done. So we once again had everything planned to go and everything booked. And then, you know, we were going to spend the whole con there, and then we couldn't. So that was a problem. But thanks to some excellent, awesome, fantastic people, I was able to find the way to get the logistics to work. And so I will be there. I'll be arriving Thursday night, and then I'll be there for Friday and Saturday. And I'm going to leave Saturday a little late. I want to hang out for the Origins Awards, assuming everything is done with Dice Masters by that point. That's not until 7 p.m. I think we should be good there. And then I also want to go to the Dice Tower recording at 9 o'clock p.m. on Saturday. So I'll be bolting from Columbus after that's done.
You'll get home late, won't you?
Well, it's only about 4 hours.
Okay.
Or so.
All right.
It's not bad. So, yeah. I was talking to RJ on the non-podcast side of things, RJ Retro, and mentioned that I actually have this thing I'm supposed to go to for work on Thursday, and I am going to it. It's not that I'm supposed to and I'm going to play hooky. But I have this thing I'm supposed to go to, and where I have to go for it is actually going to put me like a half an hour closer to my destination anyway. So
nice.
It's going to just get me a little more convenient to the interstate and everything else, so I can just pop right on I-70 and go. So
that's
nice.
Awesome. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So let's talk about Origins itself a little bit, and let's go to everybody's area of concern right away. Where do I eat? Now, reputationally, I know of a couple of good places, and you having been to Columbus can probably speak to some of this. The first one that I have heard a lot of good stuff about is Barley's. It's a brew pub, and it's pretty much right across the street from the convention center, as I understand it.
It is literally across the street. It's like a, I don't know, 4-lane road there, and you cross the street and you're there. So Barley's is great. The food's great. The libations are great, and the atmosphere, everything. It's cool. So it'll probably be pretty packed most of the con.
Yeah, I hear they really embrace the con goers at Barley's.
Yeah, I think they pretty much embrace any kind of conference at the convention center just because they're right there. And you know, so sure. They're catering to the people who are close, and that's then the audience that they serve. So, it's great for sure. And, right behind Barley's is a little strip called the North Market. And
now I have heard so many things about the North Market, so many amazing things. And you told me before the show that you actually do have some experience there. So I'm hoping that you're going to tell me that they are exactly as amazing as what I have heard.
Probably more so. So there's like, I don't know, 10 or 12 places to eat and get grub in the North Market. And they're all like independent local vendors. And most of them partner with... local butchers or local farms it's crazy. So
we're talking like super fresh stuff and local supporting mom and pop kind of stuff.
Yeah. And
wow.
And most of these places have been like in the North Market for a while. So they're pretty well established, but, I was actually at a conference, for work at, the Columbus Convention Center and in April, and I ate at the North Market both days. The first day, me and some colleagues ate at the barbecue pit that's there, and it was phenomenal. I mean, just absolutely excellent. And then the second day, I ate at the Indian cuisine place, and that was excellent as well. So, Take your pick. I mean, there's anything you want is going to be there. It's great. There's a place, you're from Pittsburgh, so there's a place you can get pierogies if you want. There's a place to...
Not only am I from Pittsburgh, I'm also Polish.
Well, there you go.
By descent.
So, you're going to be all set. there's something for everyone there, for sure. So,
And that's what I've heard. Like, just looking at the map and talking to people again, it seems like there are tons of things right around the convention center. I mean, and not just chains. I mean, I did see the fair share of chains, too. But plenty of things, and I would have to say probably great job to Columbus making the area welcoming and kind of a big deal. Like, that's just really a big plus for a city. I know Pittsburgh has an awesome convention center, and there's some stuff around it, but they still haven't quite gotten it to the point where you'd want it to be like Columbus has now. They've done a fantastic job with things all around the North Shore where the stadiums are. They're doing a great job around the new arena. And I know, actually, Columbus did a great job around Nationwide, too, where the Blue Jackets play. But the convention center isn't quite there yet, but that is very close to the Strip District, where you're going to find a lot of open-air markets and excellent mom-and-pop places, just like the North Market, too. So if you're ever in Pittsburgh, a little diversion here, if you're ever in Pittsburgh, go to the Strip District and go on, if you like hustle and bustle, go on a Saturday morning. Oh, my gosh. Fantastic.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, so. And the cool thing about the North Market, it's literally right behind Barley's. So you cross the street, you're at Barley's, and you literally go, I don't know, 50 more yards, and you're behind that building, and you're in the parking lot for the North Market. It is right there. and then, the convention center itself has a food court as well. So, there's options there. There's probably 8 to 12 places in the convention center to eat, and those that those places are used to getting a lot of people through really quick, so plenty of options in and around the convention center. I think they've really got it dialed in. That's the term I would use. They know how to handle a lot of people, and they get it done well.
Excellent. So while we're on the amenities, the one thing that I have heard as kind of a knock on Origins is that by late Saturday, maybe even a little sooner, the men's rooms tend to be pretty awful. And I have heard from experienced convention goers that it is better to walk the extra, especially if you're staying at a close hotel, it's better to walk the extra maybe like 50 yards to your hotel room and go there rather than go into a men's room that is just not as well cared for as you'd hope. Then again, maybe they're well aware of it by this point and they are making efforts to change. I don't know, but that's something that I have heard from experienced Origins folks, other podcasters, other people in my area and whatever else. But let's move on to the con itself. We know how to fuel
Please.
And take care of the other side of fueling. There are so many different things to look forward to. If you want to sit down and demo some games, this is a great con. The vendor hall is there. It's not going to be riddled with new releases, and nobody's rushing the vendor hall the way they do at Gen Con. But there's going to be like a fair share of good board game stuff there. If board games are your thing, you're going to love it. There's plenty of vendors. There's plenty of game companies that are there. There are, in fact, I think there are a few companies who this is going to be their first Origins. I understand that Portal Games, who is coming out with Mysterium, a game I'm really very much looking forward to this year, is going to have a booth. Mayfair does a lot of stuff there, so if you're a Catan fan, or Catan, depending on who you are and how you say it, there should be plenty of things going on with that, too. Fantasy Flight Games is absent from this con. They don't tend to do much with Origins, and there are a couple of other absences. But with WizKids Moving Worlds here, of course, that helps up some of the profile. And it's just a great con, a great con for gaming. Again, like your friend said, JT, and like I've heard, it just seems very relaxed. You don't worry about like missing this next gigantic announcement or whatever else. You know, you don't mind going off site to eat for a little bit because, yes, there's a lot going on, but you can do it all at your pace. And yes, there's a lot of people at this con, but you're not like wall to wall with 40,000 other people the way you are at Gen Con.
Yeah, so one of the things that Dave, my buddy who's gone for years, has said is that some of the events, like, you know, the tournament and qualifier and those kind of events, like we're planning on doing with Dice Masters, they get a little bit challenging to do that and participate in just the demo experience for mm-hmm. how much is there. And so he said this year he's not doing like any of that. He's just going strictly to try and demo stuff and play as much as he can, because every year he finds three or four games that are just must-haves. He has to add them to the collection. And that's in addition to the stuff that he just likes to play and enjoys. He says every mm-hmm. year he finds three or four that you just have to have in your collection. So, And that stuff, you know, you sit down, you demo a game, you play with people you know or don't know, and it can be very relaxed and you enjoy it and learn new games and meet new people. And he says that's the best experience for him. So if that's what you're into, this provides that, hands down.
Yeah, absolutely. All the stuff I'm looking forward to is later on at night. I want to go to the Secret Cabal meetup. That's the Secret Cabal Gaming podcast, which is one that I listen to pretty regularly. And in fact, I listened to them before I listened to the Dice Tower. That was kind of the way that I discovered a little more. They were my gateway into the broader gaming world after we already had like Dominion and Carcassonne and a few other of the Euro games. The Secret Cabal was my gateway, so I'm looking forward to going to that meetup. They always have stuff they're giving away and whatever else, and I think that's at something called the Big Bar on 2, whatever that is. I'm sure I'll find out, but that's on, like, Friday night. So I'll definitely go check that out. I'll be neat to meet them. Of course, the Origins Awards, as long as things are done by 7, which they ought to be, I would hope. They might not be. They might not be. But Dice Masters is being recognized with that Origins, the Vanguard Award, it's called, which is recognizing innovation in games. And certainly, I have to say, the innovation that strikes me with Dice Masters, while we're on the subject, has got to be that, okay, so it's easy to look at this and say, oh, it's like Magic in this way, it's like Pokemon in this way, it's like these other competitive card games in all of these different ways. And yet, at its core is Quarriors. And at the core of Quarriors is a deck-building game, Dominion, Ascension, whatever else. And those games are Euro games. They're economic yeah. engine, resource management, blah, 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 Euro games.
Yeah.
This is the very first competitive, collectible, tournament championship-worthy Euro game.
Yeah.
That's some innovation right there. They have yeah. taken something that, like, everybody's knock on Dominion. It's a great, well-designed game. Donald X Vaccarino just knocked it out of the park. It won the Spiel des Jahres for a reason in Germany. But it's a lot of multiplayer solitaire. It's not very interactive from player to player. They solved the interaction problem and made it collectible and competitive and championship worthy. But it's a Euro game. That's innovation to me. That's just elevating the genre to a level that it never before was. And I think there are a lot of people who would look at like Dominion and be like, "What? I don't want to do this. What is this?" Who are like, "Yeah, Dice Masters. Oh yeah, right now, let's play."
Right.
So they kind of disguised it pretty well too.
Yeah, and you know, with the IPs that they've released so far, they kind of cast a broad net, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is awesome. So when Randy brought me in, it was this past winter, and we had two sets. We had AVX and UXM, and you know, I'm a big Marvel fan. I loved it, and you know, he said now Yu-Gi-Oh's coming out, and they've announced D&D and DC after that, and I was like, well, I'll buy more when DC comes out, but to be honest, there's so much about the game that is just awesome that I bought some Yu-Gi-Oh stuff. I got a decent collection of D&D, and it's just a phenomenal game that can cross IPs. The whole thing's excellent. So I think they're very deserving of the Vanguard Award. I think they've definitely got something here that is absolutely phenomenal. We all love it. So
obviously,
that we can support it is great. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that was me too. I was like, well, Yu-Gi-Oh, I don't know anything about it. Maybe I'll grab the starter and, you know, we'll see what happens from there. And I was even feeling that way about Age of Ultron because I'm more DC-oriented. And obviously, I'm far beyond that right now. There are just so many things I'm looking forward to with all of these sets. Yu-Gi-Oh, as soon as we started to see some of the things that were spoiled and some of the things that were going to be made possible by cards in that set, I was like, all right, yep, got to buy that. Then we saw D&D, and I'm like, oh, all right, got to buy that too. I definitely do not care so much about what the picture is on the card or what the title is on the nameplate. I care about what the cards do, how they interact, what awesome things they're going to let me do. These games are all about any game like this, any collectible, competitive game with unique cards and all that. They're all about giving you ways to break the rules. Every game is going to be played a little bit differently, whether the rule is, you know, from a macro standpoint with like the who's the beatdown stuff, and it's like, well, this game the rules are control wins, so you need to find a way to take me out of that, or whatever else, like establishing that dominating position, or even just on a card, like, well, normally this can't happen, but I'm going to play this ability which allows this to happen. That's what everything is. Every one of these global abilities and whatever else that we do, everybody who brings something brings a different set of rules to the table.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's awesome. And that's what we get to do all the time with this game. And it's just so much fun. I like to see what rules the next set is going to let me break. I don't care what the cards are. Just show me how they interact and I'm buying. I'm in. I'm a junkie. Sorry.
That's awesome. I think I am too. So that's sweet.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Dice Tower live recording is something else that I'm going to late Saturday night. That's because, for me, there are a lot of games that I've either bought or skipped because of the sage advice of Tom Vassell and his cohorts at the Dice Tower. And one of those games, very importantly, was Dice Masters.
Mm.
If I hadn't paid attention to the Dice Tower, I would have been one of those people waiting forever for AVX to get reprinted. But I knew, I saw the stuff, and I knew, and I was on my store's butt making sure that they had it. When was it coming? Do you have it yet? Do you have it yet? Great, I'm in. I bought it. So if it hadn't been for them, I would have still been waiting. And they've done so much for the game from the folks who are coming from a board gaming side. You know, a lot of WizKid stuff is marketed the game to folks who are coming from Yu-Gi-Oh! Or other things like that. But with Tom Vassell pushing the game from the board gamers side of things, man, that just really makes such a big difference and opens the game up to another great set of people. Because maybe some of them are people who have moved on from other CCGs in the past, never found anything like myself that really scratched that itch. They've tried some LCGs and found Netrunner to be amazing, for example, but just couldn't get it to the table because it required so much investment of time, and you really have to make two different decks all the time just to be able to play, like, in a store-level thing. And then enter this game, where I can buy a starter set and a gravity feed, and I can be pretty much set with a set.
Yeah. Yeah, there may be a couple cards you want to pick up just for their ability, but from a from a dice standpoint and from a, you know, just a volume standpoint, you're going to have virtually basically what the set offers, you know? It's awesome.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you get something to trade or whatever else. So, again, long and short of it is Dice Tower is something that I'm just a fan of. I'd love to be able to meet Tom and just chat back and forth with any of those guys a little bit. I've had the chance to do that on the Dice Tower Showdown podcast now and again, and that's been great fun. I really appreciate them having me on that. But, you know, again, in context of Dice Masters, that's why I'm playing this game, is because of Tom. And then later on, of course, Rodney Smith coming out with the video for his Watch It Played series, though I think that one was WizKids approached him and asked him to do that. That might have been a paid thing. But regardless, if you want to find me on Saturday at 9, go to wherever they're doing that. The last I saw, there were only like 30 spots left in that room. So, yeah, it does cost $2, which is what the con insisted. Otherwise, Tom usually does that stuff for free. So, but that's not all. If you can't do, like, there are Rainbow Drafts that are firing, obviously, for Dice Masters. There are all kinds of demos, there's open playrooms, there's all kinds of stuff that you can do, even if you're not able or willing to participate in Dice Masters Worlds here. And we're going to talk about Dice Masters Worlds right after this. You're listening to the Reserve Pool Network. Check out more blogs, podcasts, forums, and online organized play at thereservepool.com.
Hey guys, Randy here. I just wanted to tell you about another one of the podcasts in the Reserve Pool Network, The Attack Zone. And if you haven't listened to this week's episode already, go back and give it a download. Dave and I had a few extra guests in-house, and we talked about some of the team archetypes you might see in the DC Constructed landscape. So, like I said, go back, give it a download if you haven't listened to it yet, and really dig into some of this strategy that we're getting into. And if you are already a listener of the Attack Zone, thank you so much for listening, and be ready for our next episode coming out halfway through June, talking about what the new constructed meta looks like coming out of Worlds, and what teams succeeded, what teams didn't, what cards are popular, and what the new top team to beat is. So yeah, be sure to listen to the Attack Zone, coming to you from the Reserve Pool Network every other Tuesday.
Hey, I'm RJ Retro.
And I'm Shadow Milk.
Join us on Tuesday for the next episode of The Prep Area.
We're going to talk about the World Championship team and maybe a way to build it economically.
We will debut the new meta, Little Cup, by providing you with a team. Plus, the nefarious geneticist himself created the evilest team in the world.
Apologies in advance.
Oh yes, join us on The Prep Area Tuesday via iTunes or at thereservepool.com.
All right, so the con isn't the only thing we're concerned about with Origins. We are concerned about WizKids World Championships for Dice Masters. The main event is on Saturday, but if you are not one of those couple of lucky people who get to just automatically walk in the door on Saturday, we have qualifiers happening, and that would be on those would be on Thursday and on Friday, both starting at 10, scheduled to end at 3. I have to imagine they might end up going just a little bit beyond that. But certainly we'll see. From the numbers that I'm seeing, they may not need more than 5 rounds of Swiss to get to what they need to get to. And depending on how they're going to do the cuts, I mean, they're taking 16 from each qualifier. Depending on how they're going to do the cuts, they might not even need to do more than 5 at all. So there's that. But we've, of course, been sitting here preparing for it. JT prepping for the main event and myself prepping for the qualifiers. And we've been doing quite a lot of playtesting and everything else. So let's talk first a little bit about the playtesting experience as you and I have had it so far. I think for a while, if I could describe the process and break it down, it was a lot of, at first, I like this, ooh, I like this, ooh, I like this, ooh, I like this. And then it was kind of settling in on one kind of like core deck. But then for me, it was looking at that core deck and saying, okay, here's this deck if it looked like this. Here's this deck if it looked like this. And like just tweaking characters and tweaking the speed at which it plays and all sorts of things. And then we all kind of put our heads together, settled down, and I locked in last week. How was it for you?
Very similar. So that where you kind of settled.
Well, I guess
in
I locked. Wait,
on...
I locked in 2 weeks ago from the perspective of where we are right now. Yeah, that would be about right. So tell me about how it worked for you.
So yeah, so you kind of settle in on a deck after you play with this, you play with that, you play with this. What about this strategy? What about that strategy? You know, in general, like, where am I target? Let's play with this win condition. Let's play with this win condition. Let's play with this. You settle down a little bit. You start tweaking with the team. Swap this card for that. Swap this card for that. You start mm-hmm. dealing with one. And I heard this on the one of the recent podcasts over at Dysonon. You know, it seems like when you get to that point, maybe you're just trading a card to deal with something and you've traded out the opportunity to deal with something else, and you just
yep.
kind of start going in this little circle and you got to figure out how to hedge your bet on that one, right? Like, well, what do I think I'm going to see more of? And so I think for me, as I got to that point, I really started to to have a lot of anxiety and panic about it. And
you sure did.
Yeah, I was kind of a hot mess for a while. Like, well, I got to do this. I can't pilot that. I'm going to be terrible at that.
Well, the crazy thing was there was a period where you were so confident, and then like I felt like the next day came and you were like, oh my gosh, I have no idea what I'm doing now. I'm like, wait, what? You were my rock. What's happening?
I'm still kind of that way. I'll figure something out Friday night and probably change it Saturday at 9:50. Like.
He's being glib, I hope.
a little. The thing is, you know, we've played around with these strategies enough that, you know, if I settle on something Friday night or Saturday morning, it's not because, oh, I had an epiphany and this is what's going to do well. It's because, you know, you finally just say, well, I've done all I can do. I got to take something. What am I most comfortable with? What am I most confident with? Maybe it's just a gut thing. Like, man, this is the thing that I feel the best for me about. Like, so
yes, and that's the most important conclusion that you can come to. Once you've kind of identified, okay, it's probably rock, paper, scissors between these various decks, and each of these decks is maybe, you know, X and O against one type and O and X against another type. And you just have to say, well, there's no way that I'm going to be able to accurately guess that everybody is going to have one versus the other. So I'm just going to bring the one that I play the best with. And at that point, I've done all that I can do.
Yep.
So much variance in this game. It's dice and it's best of one. And it's, you know, going first versus going second and all those different things. That if you pick a deck that's competitive, if you pick the most competitive deck that you also know how to play well, that has consistency and that has, consistency and flexibility, then that's, you've done all you can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this is really good for the game, right? Like, to have these options, to have these kind of conversations where, you know, you can spend X amount of time going, well, I think this is probably the most appropriate strategy for this kind of tournament based on what we know about the meta. But, let's look at these other two options as well. And then you play them and you play them and you play them and you play them. And you go first and you go second and you stage poor rolls, you stage good rolls, you do those things. So,
well, there are some poor rolls that, like, there's just not a whole lot you can do from. You can stage some of them, or you can just let them come up in play testing. I don't know, but I was playing a game a couple of days ago against a good friend of mine, and he, a guy who's become a good friend of mine from playing this game, and I rolled and I got like sidekick, shield. I'm like, uh-oh. And then so I rerolled a couple and I got like three sidekicks and an energy. Well, that's no good. All right, let's see what happens. And I moved on to turn two and I got like shield, sidekick, 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 and I rerolled and it didn't get any better. So, I mean, I was two turns behind the whole game. I lost pretty quick, and that's just what it is. That was the only really bad loss, like a completely non-competitive loss from playtesting in the latter stages here. But there's some times where there's just something that you're not going to be able to do a whole lot with.
Because
when you're set back that badly, you're in a tough spot. You just are.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I feel like this has been a little bit tough meta to read. You know, Randy and I have been awfully busy. He had a baby. We've been going to Cincinnati to try and do some work on the house, getting it ready to sell. And, like, so our local scene has probably suffered. Maybe not suffered, but definitely taken a back burner. And so we've been a little isolated in trying to do this. I mean, obviously that we've been part of the community and so forth on TRP and that's great, but I feel like sometimes you just need to do some stuff in person and see it. And, you know, when you play with the same core group of maybe six or seven guys all the time, that maybe it doesn't, your meta doesn't grow the way it probably should, or maybe it is elsewhere. And so this has been a little bit of a tough one for me to read. At least it feels that way. So I
think it's been tough to read because we fairly quickly anyway, identified several different teams that we were like, okay, these can win. And then it was like, okay, so now how consistent are they against one another in different matchups and stuff? And some of them evolved out of what we saw at U.S. Nats and Canadian Nats and stuff like that. Others came out of discussions that we've been a part of internally, that we've seen taking place externally, and still others came out of things that we just experimented with, and sometimes we found pyrite and other times we found gold. And so I think we identified a set of things that were like, okay, these are all pretty good. And it's like, well, this one beats this but loses to this, and this one beats that but loses to the other thing. And it was just constant back and forth, to the point where I think what we tried to do was put together the team that has, as I mentioned before, a lot of flexibility. That also has a lot of consistency, you know, varying ways to play it and pilot it depending on the situation that you find yourself in, without sacrificing power, which sounds like a difficult juggling act, and it is. And there were a couple of cards that we were really back and forth on for a while. But I think what we've settled on has a lot of merit. But I think what anybody who's taken this kind of time has settled on at this point is going to have a lot of merit. And that's why we play the games.
Yeah, well, you're not taking a team that you feel like, well, this is probably pretty crappy. like, you're just not doing
I hope
that.
Not. You might, I mean, just for fun.
Well, somebody will probably troll day two if they qualify day one. But, like, that'll be fun to watch. I mean, I won't be there, but that'll be funny. And
it'll be less funny for the people who can't make day one and need day two to make it.
Well, that's a little bit fair. But by the same token, like, I think ultimately it's that kind of creativity and, you know, free thinking that really push the game, and push players to do new things with old cards. And so, and we kind of talked about that. Like, one of the teams I was, you know, considering for a while was, using cards that people use for other purposes. You know, maybe it was a card that people were using for a global that I actually considered a buy. And those are the kind of things that I think make testing fun and ultimately do push the meta along. This one, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say that's where evaluating tournament results correctly becomes such a crapshoot, especially as the game is evolving. You know, it was pretty easy to evaluate tournament results from the earliest tournaments with this game when every team was like pretty much the same thing. And you know, even at U.S. Nationals, there was a lot of variance, but then there were a lot of things that made those teams similar. I would argue that there were more things that made them different than it would, you know, appear at first glance. Like, the way that people were using Gabi and Black Widow at U.S. Nationals had nothing to do with how it had been used before. It just did not. for the most part on those teams. But regardless of that, you know, because there are several different strong archetypes, because there are only, it's only a best of one, you know, until we get to the top eight or however they're doing that at this one. I think there's a top 16.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, I don't know exactly how they're running the qualifiers, but the world championship on Saturday, there is a top 16 cut, and after okay. that, it's best of three. So it'll be Swiss until then. Which will be interesting, all right? Because right? like there should be somewhere in the ballpark of 35 or so participants, depending on which national champions come and the cuts and all that stuff.
Right.
Qualifiers and you know who sticks around for Saturday. Roughly, you're right.
Right. No.
So, you know, if half the people
and
make
the other things are just going to be rounds of Swiss on the for the qualifiers, but. The way that it's run, you know, there are going to be teams that are really good teams that miss the top 16 cut. There are going to be teams that are really good teams piloted by really good people that are going to miss the cut to the, you know, maybe even miss in both qualifiers.
Yeah.
They're going to miss the cut for the main event. And that's what it is. We have dice in this game. There's a lot of variance. Now, there's a lot to be said for consistency, but if you have, you know, if Hulk, let's just say, because we all know and love Hulk, if Hulk is a key piece to your win condition and you get him and he comes up energy, 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 until you buy another one and they all come up energy, 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 I mean, there's a point where you think the law of averages have to work out for you. But sometimes, you know, sometimes things like that seeming consistent result where it's always something you can't use very well, don't seem random. They actually are pretty random. There's not a lot you can do about that. I mean, yeah. if I hadn't have bothered with U.S. Nationals, you know, Randy would have made the top two. Randy had the same team as me. He would have made the thing to day two, the cut to day two, and then he went 1-4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you just look at that team, was that a bad team? No, it wasn't. You know, Randy had some really bad rolls. I think that was the first thing he said. He was like, yeah, all my opponents were like, man, your dice just hate you today, you know? And that's going to happen. That's going to happen. You know, I'm sure there are similar things at just about any tournament. It's like, wow, these teams are similar. These players both know what they're doing, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you know, I think you see that even in the local scene or in testing too, right? Like, mm-hmm. you'll go through a series of games where your team underperforms due to roles, and you might panic and say, "Well, that's it. I can't do this. This isn't what I thought it would be, and it's not working out the way it should." And I've spent a lot of time in Excel trying to calculate probabilities, and you know, well, what if I roll this many dice? Well, what if I roll this many dice? Or, and so you go with the best available information, and do what you can. You know, like, character dice are all the same probabilities. They're,
yes.
Three sides are characters and three sides are energy. Like, that's...
Well, and I'll tell you this, too. Like, there are plenty of times where you're going to have bad rolls and that's going to feel bad. And maybe you're just kind of playing solitaire, trying to just work out your buy orders and stuff. It's like, man, these rolls are awful and I'm panicking. Exactly like you said, JT. But there are going to be times when you have good rolls and your opponent has good rolls. You have good rolls, your opponent has bad rolls. You have bad rolls, your opponent has good rolls. You have bad rolls, and your opponent has bad rolls. Like, all of those things are equally, like, they're equally likely to happen. You almost have to go into, like, biology class and make a Punnett square. Like, all of those things can occur in various combinations because, you know what you rolled, and that stinks for you. But you got to take into account that your opponent's going to have, your opponent's just as likely to have bad rolls when you do, too, as he has to have good rolls when you have bad.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't let that worry you because these are all things that are beyond your control. That's where we get into the results-oriented thinking piece, right? I mean, I feel like a lot of it comes back to that when we're talking about these tournaments. But you can't worry about where you finished as long as you made good decisions in terms of what deck you're bringing with you and good decisions in the games that you played, then you did everything right, and that's it.
Yep. Yeah, Yeah, so I think...
And that's that, too. Just because something wins the whole darn thing does not mean that it was actually the strongest team there.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it's the strongest team in the meta.
Right.
And I think a lot of people look at something that won a local tournament for... It's winning other local tournaments for their next local tournament, that won a national or regional-level thing for their next thing. You know, net decking becomes a thing. And there's nothing wrong with net decking. It's a valuable tool for learning, especially for newer players. I encourage it, as long as you'll also learn how to pilot the team. But that doesn't mean that it was the best team that could have, you know, that could have been there. It does not mean that at all.
Right.
And it just means that, you know, maybe against its least favorable matchup, whenever it played it, you know, it just performed better in terms of the roles.
Yep.
There's too many things you can't control that it's not worth worrying about all of them.
Yeah.
Go play a game that you love.
Yeah. And to illustrate that point, like, so let's ask the question, because it's unanswerable right now. Which team was better? The team I won Canadian Nationals with, or the team that Walsh won U.S. Nationals with?
Oh my God!
You know, like that. You can't answer that. Like, I didn't play against Walsh. I played against his team. Mm-hmm. I didn't play against Walsh. Walsh didn't play against my team. Like, that's goofy. I played against a team that was exceedingly similar to Walsh's and lost. I played against a team that was exceedingly similar to Walsh's and won. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's the game, right? So. Do what you're comfortable with. Do what you know you can pilot, and try and make good decisions ahead of time, and try and make good decisions in the moment, and learn.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And share your Nationals decks or Worlds decks with everybody, please. We want to see them, even if you went, you know, 0-5 or whatever. We want to know. We want to see what was brought, because I guarantee that if you spent time and energy putting forward your deck, you have a good idea at the core, and just for whatever reason ran into a combination of bad matchups, bad rolls, whatever else, and didn't get there. However you perform, let us see it. Let everybody see it, because yeah. You know, and if you're going and you're like driving there right now as you're listening to this and you're still on the fence, don't just take something that performed well because it performed well. Take it because you know how to pilot it, like performed well for somebody else. Take it because you know how to pilot it. You know the cards. You understand the ins and outs of when you're going to buy this versus that. That's when you should take it. Don't just take it to take it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I feel the need to mention that if your strategy to avoid having to deal with Prismatic Spray is to take all of the characters without text, let me just warn you that one's probably not going to work in your favor. But beyond that, like, if you've tested stuff, feel comfortable with it and own it, because, you know, you probably did put in the work necessary to come up with a good idea. And we're all going to learn from each other anyway, so, you know, share that.
I would say the hardest part of playtesting was going into the matchups that I knew, approaching the matchups that I knew were tougher for me to win, just based on, like, my deck composition versus my opponents, and trying to learn, you know, how do I need to buy for this matchup so I can maximize my equity? I think that those are the toughest ones to go in, because you sit there and it's easy to be like, man, I know what they're going to do. I know how they can beat me. I know where I know this weakness that it has that it's exploiting that isn't a weakness against, you know, 75% of other teams here. But this one gets it. This is the team I'm going to be 0-X against. But don't just be defeated right there. You know how you're buying cards. That was the hardest thing. It's like, okay, but if I buy this and I buy this, I go from having like 10% to win or 0% to win if I just scoop, to like having me, you know, 35. So maybe 35% is the best chance I can get in this matchup. I need to play for every single point of that 35%.
Yep.
So
yeah.
That can be fun too, though it can be frustrating if you can't recognize it. You just got to take yourself out of it and play cool.
Yeah.
Play cool. So, any big expectations for you, JT? I don't know. I don't know if we want to say them, because it's like, oh, that means they're playing this or they're not playing that.
No,
but maybe anything broad based.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think we should expect to see some continuation of some of the archetypes we've seen. I think, you know, somebody will do something a little bit new with Flying Sidekicks because they know it. They feel like it's a good strategy, and so they'll try and build in, maybe it's the, you know, Wonder Woman card that can make him a little impervious, and you know, maybe someone will do something, a little bit of a tweak on Walsh's team. Somebody may do a little bit of a tweak on a Nova team, or a new take on High Hopes or Patch of Ender. I think we'll see some of the stuff that we've been seeing. I don't think it's going to be a totally new landscape. But
I don't think so either. I think the decks that will rise above are going to be the ones, and I fully expect to see teams and successful teams. And I will say that I think we're going to see teams and successful ones at that use far less of the established, you got to use this stuff, than we had to this point. People thought that the U.S. Nationals list was very similar at the top eight level. I think that we're going to see some more variance, and if those teams do not make it up into the top eight, top four, even the championship match, it's not going to be because they're bad. It's just going to be because they ran into whatever wall they ran into. But I think we're going to see some very, very viable competitive teams that don't use some of the established stuff. I think we're also going to, of course, see viable competitive teams that do use the established stuff, exactly like you're saying. But I think people who have been looking for more diversity are going to be pleasantly surprised, unless we have a lot of people who are less, who've taken less time for preparation and are just kind of going with what they feel like has worked in the past because they know it best. Yeah. And that's a perfectly viable way to approach it, too.
Yeah, and to clarify, I think we'll see a lot of similarities to those teams that we've seen in the past, but I think most of what we will see is a twist, a tweak. You know, let me add a little bit of removal. Let me add a little bit more punch. Let me add a little bit more speed. It'll be continuing to evolve, but some of the core will stay the same, and that's good, because if that's happening, then you know, you have people in four different areas doing four different things to the same original piece, the same original core, and so you will see more variance. You'll see maybe a Flying Sidekicks deck with some more control. You'll see a Flying Sidekicks deck with some more removal. You'll see, I mean, that's the kind of thing that you're gonna, that I think we're gonna see most of. Now, don't get me wrong, we will absolutely see something that we don't expect. You know,
yeah,
that's going to happen. Like, when I sat down against Patrick and saw the weenie wall, I was like, when I sat down against him in Swiss rounds at Canadian Nationals, I was like, well, okay. Let me show you Hulk. Like, and then I struggled, and I was like, I'm such a tool. Like, I thought I was gonna bury this guy,
right,
and his strategy is like owning me right now.
Just doesn't work for that Hulk. Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
I think
there's going to be all kinds of stuff. I think we'll see everything from tiny variations to completely new archetypes. I think we're going to see old cards that were made more useful by DC. I think we're going to see DC cards that made old things less useful that will pop up as well. So I'm really looking forward to the whole experience. I want to see what other people are playing. I want to see where it all is. I want to just do the absolute best that I can and play the best that I can, and we'll go from there. You know, if it was 2 out of 3, or if it was like playing for points the way I think that Scott has suggested on the forums, where like rounds are a game apiece, one player goes first, the other player, you know, in one game, the other player, you know, you switch that, and if you win, you get a point, if you lose, you don't.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, if you sweep, you get 2 points. If you split, you get 1-1, and go from there. That might be fair. I don't know. Everything has its drawbacks, though.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to seeing the whole thing and meeting some people. If you see me, I'm 6'4". You'll probably see me. I mean, I know there will be other very tall people there and taller than me. If you see me, say hello. Don't feel like you're going to be bothering me. Don't feel like I don't look approachable right there. I might just be thinking, what am I going to eat? As I have a very stern look on my face. Talk to me and come up and tell me what I should eat or something.
Yeah.
I'll get people running up to me. Dave, yes, hamburgers. And then I'll just run away. Well, you told me to say what you should eat. But seriously, come up and say something. I'm all about the people. I want to see people. I want to meet new people. I feel like with this podcast, we have all of these people, all of these like friends that we talk to, but we never get to interact with the other way in such a way, because, you know, even the forum is text or email. It's just text. So this will be pretty cool to meet some people and all that stuff and play some games of Dice Masters.
Yep. It's going to be good.
So absolutely it will. I'm really excited, and I look forward to seeing you on Saturday one way or the other, however those early rounds go for me. So from all of us here at the Reserve Pool, safe travels to Origins, or if you're already there, safe travels back. Good luck. I'm Dave.
I'm JT.
And this has been the Reserve Pool. We'll see you again soon.
Later.